Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Even though you're not the head coach, but finding ways to get in and, you know, guys hear your voice and, you know, because those are all things sometimes as a young coach you can struggle with. You know, when the head coach and the top assistants, they're running all the drills and they're doing all these different things. And so you could find yourself standing there. And he just always made it a point to me in staff meetings to talk about, man, you need to figure out how to coach these guys on the floor. You know, you got to find your pockets when to get in and say stuff, pull, you know, just things like that, that really, really helped my development, I feel like, as a young coach.
Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new, genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com/membership on risingcoaches.com.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
All right. Welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast, brought to you by Dr. Dish, the best basketball shooting machines in the world. Our guest here today, Quentin Farrell, head coach at Presbyterian, I'm sure has spent many hours on various shooting machines throughout his day. Visit drdishbasketball.com. Check out all their different machines. Check out, they have a great series of drills, various shooting drills from some of the best coaches in the country. And in the world, really, drdishbasketball.com. All right. As I mentioned before, we are very excited about our guest today, head coach of Presbyterian, Quentin Farrell. Q, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Adam, man? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here. How's we scheduled this a few weeks ago. We thought this was going to be like a nice, easy day for you, but schedule's got turned around. You got a game tonight, right?
Yeah, we actually play Charleston Southern tonight at home. But, you know, just another impact of COVID year, the league, you know, having to adjust on the fly, but it's all good.
Yeah, you gotta adapt and react is the name of the game these days. So, well, Q, first of all, it's great to have you on here. It's good to catch up, but I want to like talk about your career and your path and things like that. But can you start off by giving us a little info on Presbyterian? And don't give us like, don't give us the recruiting pitch, Q.
Yeah.
There's no prospects watching. It's all coaches. So give us like some history, like on the levels, like when they transition and things like that.
Yeah. So I graduated high school in 2003. And the head coach at the time, Greg Nybert, he was the one who actually recruited me. And even back then, the school was already in talks of transitioning from Division II to Division I. And so for me, you know, I came on my visit, me and my mom, and you know, just met the staff, met the players. And the first thing that stood out really was the just the family kind of friendly environment of the campus, you know, in terms of because it's a small private school. So, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody. The professors really know the students. And I could feel that as a high school senior, you know, when I came on campus. And then obviously Coach Nybert had built a tremendous culture basketball wise, had a lot of success at the Division II level. And so his program was, you know, it operated like a Division I program, you know, now being in Division I for 15 years and just thinking back on it, you could tell it was a really well ran, you know, program, you know, even back then with him. And so And Coach Nybert, actually, he learned under a guy that worked many years for Bobby Knight. And so Coach Nybert was this, you know, turn over every stone, extremely well prepared. You know, if you had to practice 4 hours to get ready for a game, he would do it. So, you know, the place was, I mean, it was a big time place. You know, academically, PC obviously had a great reputation throughout the country. And so you combine that with, you know, a really good basketball program, and, you know, you come here and you get to, you know, experience all of that. And it's a, you know, it's a place where anybody would want to send their, you know, their kid. So kind of fast forward, you know, I get the campus here, and, you know, we have some really good teams when I was here. And then going into my last year is when PC made the transition. And so Coach Nybert actually knew I wanted to get into coaching, and he offered me an opportunity to get on staff during my senior year. So I kind of knew at the start of my senior year that I was going to stay and be on staff, and that was going to be our first year in Division I, you know, after my senior year. And so did that. And, you know, just PC's just been a special place, you know, for me in terms of playing, getting my degree, and then, you know, the players I've got to coach, and, you know, the wins and all the different things like that, and now have an opportunity to come back and be the head coach here.
All right. First of all, give us your scouting report as a player. What were you like dressing up with blue nose back in the day?
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing was my main responsibility was to guard the other team's best players. So Coach Knopper always said I was the best defender he ever coached. So, you know, what I learned was, obviously, you know, when you get to college, like most kids, you come from high school and, you know, you're the best player and you score a lot of points and all these types of things. And when I got to college, Coach Nybert, his system, we played inside out. Like every year our post guys were, you know, one of the best guys in the league in terms of production. And then, you know, one of my best friends, and he's an assistant at Middle Tennessee State, Sean Dixon, he was a shooting guard and was our leading scorer. So, you know, my job was to run the team, not turn the ball over, get the ball to our post guy, get the ball to Sean, you know. And you know, after a while, when you're young, you kind of want to do what you want to do. And then I learned quickly, you know, for us to be really, really good, you know, I got to do what my coach asked me to do. And so I was all about winning. So that always trumped everything. And so I just learned early on, you got to buy into your role and be a star in your role. And so for me, I defended at a high level, took care of the basketball. And, you know, we had some really good teams.
Yeah, I love it. I was going to bring up Sean. So I'm glad you mentioned him. Because he played, was he a year younger than you, or are you guys the same class?
Same class.
Okay. Yeah. And so you're on the staff. What are you, 22 years old when you're an assistant coach?
21.
And when does Sean join the staff? Like the same year?
So what happened was Sean played 2 years after we graduated. I got on right away. So I did 2 years. And then me and him obviously talked all the time. So we ended up having to open on staff because our top assistant actually took the women's job at PC. Ronnie Fisher, who's now the head women's coach at Campbell, who's doing a tremendous job there. I that's when I really reached out to Sean and said, man, you should get into coaching, man. And he had already been thinking about it, obviously. But when we had the opening, you know, I thought we couldn't find a better person to come in to be on staff. And so that's when he came in going into my third year.
All right, Q. So you got a program that's like transitioning from Division II to Division I, which is hard by itself. And then like you just get thrown into the deep end, like, as an assistant coach at a, you know, extremely young age. I'm sure you're without a doubt the youngest assistant coach at the Division I level at the time. Like, how are you figuring it out? You know what I mean? Or are you guys just coaching the team and trying to recruit your area, and anything else is just kind of like extra?
Yeah, well, the beauty for me was, you know, obviously I was playing or working for a head coach at the time who had a ton of experience. And had built programs and taken program from NAIA to Division II and had a lot of success at both. And so, you know, the biggest thing with Coach Nybert, it was, you know, just about working hard, you know. And so for me in the beginning stages, you know, that's really all I did. You know, at the time I was the third assistant, but I was the video coordinator and the Dobo as well, you know, while trying to figure out the business of Division I basketball. And so Coach Nybert played an instrumental part, obviously, in my development. But then I was just really blessed, man, with some of the people that came into my life in those very early years. My top assistant, Trey Meyer, he was at Clemson at the time, and I'll never forget, he used to rave about this one assistant on the staff and told me I really needed to get to know him. And it was actually Coach Smart. And so just through me and Trey growing up together and being childhood friends, the universe made it work to where he would always tell me about Coach Smart. And then one of my first times out on the road, I'm at the Peach Jam and Coach Smart walks by and he sees my shirt and he says, "Are you Quentin Farrell?" And I said, "Yes." And then at that point, you know, he started to mentor me from that day forward. You know what I mean? So at 21, you know, in my early years, 21, 22, 23, you know, guys like Coach Smart, Steve Smith, that's at Florida State, CY, that's at Florida State, Coach Earl Grant, like these guys, right when I was 21, 22, I met all these guys. And obviously they were assistant coaches at the time. But that's where I really started to learn the nuances of the business as an assistant coach. So I got it. I had it kind of good on both ends in terms of the mentors that I had right away. And then obviously those assistants being young guys and doing great things at their institutions and then working for a head coach like Coach Nybert. And it made it somewhat easier, my transition because it was my alma mater. So playing point guard for him, I knew the system inside out. I knew how Coach Nybert operated. I knew what I needed to do in terms of mentoring the players. And so as I got the information from those other assistants, it really made it a seamless transition for me.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about navigating the profession, because here you are at your alma mater, which is great. It's got a lot of perks, but the one downside of it is you don't get an opportunity to go, you know, under another coach's and program's wing and see how another, you know, operation is run. So do you feel like at all during that time, like isolated, like, you know how this business is, people, especially when you're young, you're looking at other people's trajectory and, man, this person got that job, you know, how do I get stuff like that? You know, like, was that a concern of yours at that age when you're like stuck there? And I'm sure you're wearing like every hat in the book, right, at Presbyterian. So was that a thing for you or not really because of those mentors you mentioned?
Yeah, not at all. It wasn't a thing at all, because my first 3 years, Adam, I just tried to focus on figuring out how to become the best assistant coach I could become. You know, those early years, like just getting in, I just wanted to be really, really good at my job. You know what I mean? And that just started with on campus at Presbyterian, you know, every single day, whatever I needed to do to make our program better, you know, whether that was, you know, building a relationship with the players, whether that was making sure, you know, the video stuff was right, you know, or obviously travel and all of those things were right. And then, you know, trying to get better with being on the floor as a coach, you know, and that was probably the one area of me starting off at my alma mater where it probably paid off the most, because Coach Nybert, when I first started, he coached me like a player as an assistant coach, which I'm extremely grateful for. I mean, he was really hard on me in a positive way. As a head coach, you know, just like where you tell a player, if I stop talking to you, then you should be worried. Like when I was a young assistant, he was coaching me on how to be a coach. You know, one of the first things he always told me was, if you want to make it in this profession, you got to coach your best player hard. You know, and that's something that always stuck with me when I went to other places. And even when I was an assistant, whoever the best player was, I always tried to build a relationship with him and coach him and tell him the truth. And so things like that with Coach Nybert, you know, there were maybe other things that I found out business-wise through those other young assistants at the time, you know what I mean, to learn other aspects of the business. But in terms of my foundation as a coach, you know, Coach Nybert was really instrumental in that, because he coached me on that stuff, you know, just being a coach on the floor and, you know, even though you're not the head coach, but finding ways to get in and, you know, guys hear your voice and, you know, because those are all things sometimes as a young coach you can struggle with. You know, when the head coach and the top assistants, they're running all the drills and they're doing all these different things. And so you could find yourself standing there. And he just always made it a point to me in staff meetings to talk about, man, you need to figure out how to coach these guys on the floor. You know, you got to find your pockets when to get in and say stuff, pull, you know, just things like that, that really, really helped my development, I feel like, as a young coach. And so that part, you know, in my early years, I didn't really focus on the other things as much as just trying to figure out the business and become the best coach I could become.
Yeah, that's great. And the fact that you had that relationship with your boss where you could get that kind of feedback, you don't get that too often as a coach in this profession. You know, you get your expectations of what you're supposed to get done, but not often do you get coached
Absolutely. That, and that's why I say, like, it was just a major blessing how my career started for me, just being in the business for so long now and working from different guys and seeing how it is. You know, that was, you know, probably being 21 has its disadvantages, but that was part of the advantages, I feel like, of being 21 and, you know, being at my alma mater and working for a head coach who I had a great relationship with prior. Just that part for me to grow, you know, just really learning about preparation and scouting. I mean, another thing he always talked about is you got to watch a lot of film, you know, not from a standpoint to make it sound like, oh, I'm grinding, I'm watching film, you know, but really watching film to learn to get better. You know what I mean? And so those are things early on I got kind of in my foundation, you know, as a young coach that were, you know, that was really, really important. You know, like I said, talking about coaching on the floor, watching film, you know, all these different types of things that I think obviously help you have a lot of success in your program, have a lot of success as a coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, you eventually, I think after 5 years or so, go on to Citadel and then to Army, before you land the opportunity to work at College of Charleston with Earl Grant. You had already met Earl just on the road and through those guys that mentored you. Is that right?
Yeah. I met him actually because he was at the Citadel, I think, when I was in high school. So just him recruiting and knowing his face, and then just on the road and things like that, just knew of him. And just right when I got into it, he was somebody I met. He remembered me, and just like Coach Smart, just kind of decided to take me underneath his wing. You know, as I'm a young guy, you know, I don't know anybody. I mean, when I went out on the road, I mean, I knew no one. You know what I mean? Right. So it was interesting just to meet these guys. And like I say, at that time, it was Coach Smart, you know, Coach Grant, Steve Smith, and CY. Like, those were the first four guys that I knew in college basketball in terms of, you know, other people. And so these guys were doing great things, and I was able to just connect with those guys. And in the early years, it was like they reached out more to me than I reached out to them. You know what I mean? And it was, I guess, a way of them seeing, you know, things in me, maybe that they saw in themselves, and a way to give back to the profession. And so I benefited greatly, you know, from that. And Coach Grant, we used to talk a good bit, you know, and he's obviously been instrumental in my career from the very beginning, you know, things that he talked to me about in terms of learning the business and how to recruit and all these different things like that.
Okay. And then what's it like actually working for him at College of Charleston? Because, like, for people that don't know Earl, I don't know how to say this other than, like, he's got one of the most, like, buoyant personalities. Like, the dude is just, like, a happy, most positive individual, like, ever.
Yeah. I mean, I love Coach, man. He's Coach Grant's the best, man. He just how he conducts himself, you know, never gets too high, never gets too low. Same guy every day. Cares deeply about his faith and his family. So in that permeates through the rest of the staff. Like, it's an expectation for him that, you know, whatever your faith is and your family, those are the most important things, you know, and that never changes, whether you winning, you know, 15 games in a row or you're losing. You know what I mean? Like, those things, like his core values, those things stay the same. And so just to be around him, like, obviously, I talked to him a lot over the years and I learned a lot, but just being around him and just being able to observe him, especially watching him, you know, I got to go on the staff there with him, you know, and it was his first time being a head coach, and just to watch him, you know, run a program for the first time and just see him handle all the different situations the way he handled them. And, you know, because at certain times you see something come up and you may think, oh, another guy may do it this way. And then all of a sudden Coach does it completely opposite, you know, in a situation where most guys may get pissed or be upset, and he'll just, you know, be calm and won't bother him. And he'll just kind of keep his head down and keep working. So many different things that I got to see from him on a day-to-day basis that I feel like definitely, you know, has helped me on my journey now as a head coach.
Thank you. At what point in your career did you start preparing yourself to run your own program?
Well, that's a great question, Adam. I think anybody who knows Coach Smart, I think one of the best things about him is obviously he's a super bright guy, super intelligent. He's probably one of the best guys I've ever been around in terms of professional development. So one of the things early on in my relationship with him, I'm talking, you know, 22 you know, years old, he had already started talking about that with me. Like, if you want to be a head coach one day, you need to start documenting your philosophy. You know what I mean? And so the one thing I always pride myself on, Adam, is I know people probably that don't know me and they probably see me from afar. They probably say, oh, that guy's quiet, or he doesn't talk much, or this or that. but I always listened. You know what I mean? And so when anything those guys used to tell me, I always made it a point to make sure I did it. You know what I mean? It could be the smallest thing. And so probably at 22, you know, when I was at PC, you know, every year, you know, during the year, because Shaka's whole thing was write stuff down. You know what I mean? You're not going to remember everything. And so when you start talking about documenting your philosophy, you know, there would be days I still have all my practice plans from when I was an assistant at PC, you know, and everywhere I've been. And so, you know, I'd always write down stuff on them at the end of the day, you know, what I thought, or I like this drill or whatever the case may be. So I just at a very young age, early in my career, I just got really good advice to kind of really help prepare me. And it started, like I said, probably around 22, definitely at 22, if not 21, where I just started documenting my philosophy and, you know, just really thinking about those things that will one day put me in position to where if I had an opportunity, that I'd be ready to take advantage of it.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about like the process of getting the PC job? Because it was a weird deal, right? It came open the year before you actually got it.
2 years before. Yep. 2 years. Before,
yeah. 2 years.
Right.
And I don't know how involved you were in that, but you know, your name would be on Hoopnerd and on Twitter, you know how that stuff is. There was some involvement there. So like, how does that transpire from there to like 2 years later, actually getting the job?
Yeah. You know, it's crazy how it all played out, to be honest with you. And obviously I don't think it was by accident, but you know, the first time it came open, it was after my third season at the College of Charleston. And, you know, my first year at the College of Charleston, Coach Grant's first year, we went 9-24, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And that was we set the loss record that year in program history. And so, you know, we were obviously determined. Obviously, Earl got the job really late, you know, and things like that. And so we get through the first year. And then the second year we come back, we go 17-14. And Joe Cheeley, who was a heck of a point guard for us, and Grant Riller, who was a big time two guard, both of those guys missed that season with injuries. Joe tore his Achilles and Grant tore his ACL. So we go 17-14. Jarrell Brantley, who got drafted 2 years ago, he was the freshman of the year that year. We brought him in. We had brought in a good class. But year three, Grant and Joe come back and they're healthy. And we end up going 25-10 and making it to the championship game and losing to Wilmington, Kevin Keats' team in the championship game of the CAA tournament. And so it was after that year, the PC job came open, Coach Nyber resigned. And, you know, initially, because I was so like just into what we were building at Charleston, like I had no interest in the job, zero, like none. Like I just knew like, man, we had finally turned the corner. We were, you know, first year's 9-17-25. We got everybody coming back. All of those guys are coming back. And I had got challenged one time, Coach Smart, when I was coming up as an assistant. And I had some years under my belt and I thought I was getting pretty good at the profession. You know, like we all do. Everybody thinks they're pretty good at their job or whatever the case may be in this business. And I think he maybe could sense that. And he was like, well, you know, you had never been to an NCAA tournament before, you know, help your program get to an NCAA tournament. And that thing always stuck with me, you know, as a young assistant, you know, because obviously working at PC, going through the transition, working at the Citadel, working at Army, you know, these are tough jobs, you know what I mean? And so when I got to the College of Charleston and I knew what kind of program it was because I'm from the state of South Carolina and Coach Kress and, you know, the teams they had in the 90s and things like that, all of the success, I knew it was a really good program. And so when we got there, you know, I kind of felt like, yeah, this is my chance to really help a program get to the NCAA tournament because we're at a place where we can do it. You know what I mean? And so that just was always with me. And so after that third year when we lost in the championship game, I just was so into what we were trying to get accomplished and to do that and to help Earl get that program back to the NCAA tournament. I didn't want it. And it was actually Coach Grant that insisted, like, I need to, you know, go through the interview process because PC did reach out to me, the president at the time. He reached out to me because they didn't have an AD at the time, the first time the job came open. And so President Staten was running the search pretty much himself. And he reached out to me and Earl was really adamant, you know, you need to go through it. So I did it because he was like, obviously it'd be good for you. You just never know what could come from it. You know, it'd be great experience. Not that you're wasting time or anything like that. And I knew it was a great opportunity too. So even though I knew I didn't want to do it, I still said, well, let me just make sure, like, you know what I mean? To myself, like, let me just think about this thing. It's hard to become a Division I head coach. I know that those opportunities are scarce. And so I go through the process. And as I kept going through it, and I prayed on it a lot. I still didn't want to do it because I, like I said, I really wanted to come back. I was so close, obviously, with a lot of the players in the program, my position guys and, you know, Coach Grant, and trying to really finish that thing off with having everybody come back. And so I actually got to the point I came back to campus twice, got to be a finalist for the job. And I'm not, obviously, I'm not saying I would have got the job, but I actually called the president and removed myself from consideration. But I felt like I did a really good job. Like I felt that way. And a lot of feedback I got, they thought that I did a really good job. And so I go back to Charleston the next year. Long story short, we're able to win the regular season. We end up winning the conference tournament, you know, and I, to this day, like that's the best experience of my career is playing in the NCAA tournament. You know, did it one time and it's just nothing like it if you've never got the experience. And so even I thought I really wanted to go do that. Now that I did it, I mean, I made the right decision. You know what I mean? For sure. Because that feeling to be able to do that at that level in one big league, to be able to get there, there's just no feeling like it. And so was able to go back and experience that. So it's kind of like get your cake and eat it too. And then I came back for the next year and we still had Drell Brantley and Grant Riller. So we still had a really good team. We lost in the semis the following year, but we won like 24 games, beat Memphis, beat VCU. So still had a really big time year that year. And then all of a sudden the job comes open again. And it's at that point, the first time I knew that the job came open, the very next day, the president, you know, he called me and just said, I'm going to have my AD call you the following day. And so the following day, the AD calls me. It's like a Saturday. And he basically tells me he's coming down to see me in Charleston on Monday. And this is the week of the Final Four. So it's the Monday. I'm leaving Thursday to head out to the Final Four. He comes down on Monday and offers me the job when we have lunch in Charleston. And so it was amazing because I think back to Earl's advice of, you know, doing the interview. Because it was in that interview where I got the job basically 2 years later, because I really didn't have to interview, you know, 2 years later for the job. So just a crazy story. Really.
Yeah, blessed. It is. Yeah, Q, I get this question all the time. People will hit me up and they'll be like, hey, I got an opportunity to interview for this job. I really don't think I want it, though. Should I do it? And I always tell them to do it. Like,
right.
First of all, you don't even know if you're going to get the job.
Right.
But just those reps going through an interview. And then if you got to remove yourself or turn it down, like people get it. I mean, don't be a jerk about it, but right. I mean, do it the right way. It's not going to, people shouldn't take that personal. So this is another great example of like how that works out.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that because when I called to remove myself from consideration, President Staten, you know, he really praised me on how he felt like I handled the whole situation. You know what I mean? Because that was part of it for me. Like, obviously, my initial thought was I didn't want to do it because of all the reasons I said. But then the other part was it was my alma mater and I knew a lot of people on campus. And so I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to embarrass them or do anything that I felt like would, you know, hurt anybody on the campus at PC. So that was probably the hang up for me at one point. And that's why I tried to really make sure I handled it, you know, the right way and do that, you know, in adequate time and everything like that. And you know, from his response, it sounded like I was able to do that. And then obviously, like I said, 2 years later, me and him spoke right away and, you know, it just went from there. So, but yeah, that going through that experience, I definitely don't think that's bad advice for anybody. Because again, even though I said I initially didn't want to do it, I still recognize it was a heck of an opportunity and I might, you know, my initial gut could be wrong. You know what I mean? So you don't want to just, you know, turn something down and not kind of go through it because you could change as you start to go through the process too. So no, I think that's great advice that you give other people when it comes to that.
Q, so you finally get the job. What like came really easy about taking over the program, and what was like a challenge that, you know, thinking back to those first 6 months or whatever?
Yeah, I for sure. The challenges obviously right away was, you know, just roster management. You know what I mean? And knowing who you're going to have in the program, because here you are coming in, new coach, guys don't know you at all. You know what I mean? And, you know, they were brought in by other guys that they got relationships with, they're attached to emotionally, you know, things like that. And so just sorting through that and, you know, trying to contact, you know, all of those kids, their parents, their AAU people, their high school coaches, just trying to introduce yourself and just really talk to them about your vision and telling them you want them in the program and things of that nature. You know, those were really some of the bigger challenges. from a staffing standpoint, you know, with it being my first job, I was really fortunate in that department because I knew the guys really well, and the guys that I wanted, they were available. So that made it somewhat, you know, a little bit easier to put my staff together. But the biggest thing definitely would have been just the management of the roster and the players and trying to figure out who you were going to have. And then obviously recruiting on top of that, you know, with it being already April, you know, late April, taking over the job.
Was there any part of it that just came really naturally and you were like, man, I've got this head coaching thing?
I wouldn't say that. But what I will say is, because, you know, people always say you're never prepared to be a head coach. But I just think the more you prepare yourself, like in general, leading up to that point, I just think, you know, whatever's in you, how I feel about it, it just comes out, right? Because, I mean, obviously, as a human being, you learn how to adapt and survive. And so I think if you do a good job of preparing yourself, even though you're not going to be prepared for the situation because you're not going to know how they're going to come or what things are going to come, you know, when you take a job. But I do think if you've done a tremendous job of preparing yourself, I feel like those survival, you know, traits that whatever you have, like they'll come out. The tools that you kind of put in your toolbox, they'll come out to kind of help you navigate, you know, the situations that arise and when they come to you.
What's the most, like you said, like you're never really prepared. What's the most unexpected thing you had to deal with, you know, taking it over?
Well, I just think probably more so than anything, Adam, because you have all these different ideas and things you want to get done. But, you know, you have to get prepared to be told no sometimes by your administration. You know what I mean? And I think that's a lot of times where you have to be able to pivot. You know what I mean? Because sometimes it's things you want to get done or questions you might have in your administration, and they say, oh, we can't do that or not right now. And I think those sometimes can be the times that, you know, you kind of can, I guess, get knocked back if you let it. You know what I mean? And so you have to really have to be able to, you know, pivot and move forward quickly sometimes in those situations. Because sometimes, obviously, things are out of your control that you can't get done and you can't do. You know, no matter how grand of an idea you might have that you might think that may add value to your program, you know, because you still, in certain ways, it's a team sport, right? You have to rely on other people in other departments and other areas to kind of make your program all it can be. And I think those are some of the things I think early on as a head coach, maybe. You know, sometimes if you've been a head coach for 15 years and you had some success, you might have a little bit more cachet in the building. You may be able to get some other things done.
All right. You mentioned, like, you know, Citadel, Army, Presbyterian, they're hard jobs. What does it take to overcome the challenges of the job and create a successful program that can sustain success?
Yeah. And when I say they're hard jobs, I guess that's the easiest way of putting it so people can understand. Because I never really felt that way when I was at the jobs. You know what I mean? Because it's your job. You know what I mean? I always feel like from a mindset standpoint, you got to make it great. Like you got to make it the best you can make it. And so I always feel like every place there's a formula, a recipe to have success there. You just got to figure it out. That's just the approach I always took on every job that I worked. But I think, you know, in those jobs, a lot of times, you know, it's a lot of it to me is obviously you have to evaluate, you know, whoever your head coach is. Obviously, you have to evaluate, you know, for him in terms of guys that he can coach and guys that fit his vision of how he wants to play. And then I think obviously a huge part to those jobs is, I think, development. You know what I mean? Because, you know, just the way you have to recruit and the type of players you get, you have to put a lot in on the development side. And I think that's in all facets when I say development. Obviously, the first thing people think about is on the court, right? You know, getting better as a basketball player on the court. But, you know, I think teaching guys how to watch film and to, you know, show them the importance of watching film, you know, the part of spending time with players, you know, the relationship aspect so you can coach them better. You know, I feel like there's so many different variables that lead to high level player development. You know what I mean? Outside of just, you know, becoming a better 3-point shooter, becoming a better ball handler. You know, I just think it's the investing in the whole person, you know, the relationship still of talking to the parents still once they're on your campus and talking to the high school and AAU coaches, because all these things that end up that could potentially, you know, have that person not perform to the best of their ability. You know what I mean? Things, because they still talk to their parents. They still talk to their high school coach, their AAU coach. So And when I think about development, like I said, it's, you know, obviously it's the weight room, it's the film, it's the on the court stuff, just across the board at those levels. That's important for anybody as a basketball player, obviously, to reach your full potential. But I think at the lower levels, I mean, you really have to tap into that stuff from a development standpoint across the board, I think, to give your program a chance.
What type of dudes are you looking for?
You know, really the biggest thing for me is guys that are extremely hardworking. Guys that love basketball, you know what I mean? Because obviously there's guys that are given talent and ability and they like basketball. But I found out for me, the more and more I've gotten to coach, I do really well, even as an assistant, with guys that have a genuine passion and love for the game. You know, because it's amazing how many guys now I feel like that play basketball but don't watch basketball. And to me, that's a huge part of development. You know what I mean? When you think about if you're a kid coming up and you watch a lot of basketball, you know about things and are doing things even before you can really articulate it. You know what I mean? Because you watch and you kind of mimic what you see. And so me, I feel like getting guys that love the game, you know what I mean? Like just the different facets of it. Guys that, you know, don't mind working hard, guys that are selfless. You know, obviously everybody's selfish to a degree because they want individual success, which you understand. But still getting guys where winning, you know, is the most important thing. Trying to find guys that come from a winning, you know, pedigree background, I think is always good if you can get guys like that. And I, you know, like I said, guys that work, you know, just guys that are workers. And then guys that have character and integrity. Those are really, for me, the bigger things. Because I feel like we got to do our job and evaluate guys that have some level of talent, obviously. But I'm always extremely big on the intangibles, trying to find those things out, you know, just how guys work, how their mind works, what they really, really care about.
Q, how was the transition from going to, like, from being the lead recruiter on a lot of the staffs that you've been on to now being the head coach and being the one that your assistants are bringing kids to you now?
Yeah, well, it's very different. It is very different because the amount of time that was allotted, you know, to that part of the profession for me has changed. But I did. I feel like I've gotten great advice from those guys that mentor me. They just always told me, you know, you'll figure it out as the head coach, but don't stop doing the things that you were really good at as an assistant. You know what I mean? And so I've tried to be organized and be intentional about finding ways to still have impact on my program with the things that I feel like I hung my hat on and you know, put a lot of time in that I think are really important for a program to be successful. You know what I mean? And so it is different, though, just having guys bring guys to you and you trying to watch and have final say. So obviously that part is different. But I try to still stay heavily, you know, engaged with recruiting, you know. A lot of times I do it through my assistants, though. You know what I mean? It's not as direct as much as it would be in the past. But I'm always trying to watch film and evaluate guys and, you know, make sure I'm talking to people. So that way, because, again, it's one thing to do it and you're trying to help another program or, you know, when you're working for someone else to be successful. But, I mean, it'd be crazy not to do it for your own program. So I try to stay, you know, kind of locked in with the development side and with the recruiting aspect in my program.
Q, what's the best piece of advice you give to a coach, regardless of where they're at in their career, whether they're just getting in or they've been in it for 20 years?
I would say, you know, as a coach, right, we ask a lot of our players, right? You just think about it as a coach, whether you're head coach, assistant coach, when you're in a program, you're always asking your players to be hard workers, you know, do something extra, you know, first to come, last to leave, have enthusiasm, have energy. I just always talk about just make sure as a coach you're doing those exact same things when it comes to what, you know, what your responsibilities are as a coach. I think that's what I would tell guys, you know.
Love it. Q, you're one of the, in a business that has a lot of, you know, BS in it. You're one of the most like genuine, down to earth and humble people out there, and happy to see you having some success and running your own program, man. It's awesome to watch.
No, thanks, Adam. Thanks. I mean, I'm just being a person that, you know, how my family raised me. That's the way I try to approach it. You know, even with my guys, I try to be extremely transparent and treat them like adults and communicate with them. And, you know, we tell each other the truth. And, you know, the number one rule of the program at the College of Charleston, Coach Grant, speak the truth. That's what he always said, you know. And so I believe in that as well. So it's just how I try to operate.
All right, we got Charleston Southern tonight. Give us the quick, real quick, the keys to the game to get this dub.
Well, for us, I mean, it starts on the defensive end for us. So obviously we want to do a good job in limiting them in transition. So our transition defense is going to be key. And then the other part for us is they got the preseason player of the year who will have a chance to be the player of the year. He's averaging about 20 a game, Flan Fleming. So we need to do a good job on him and don't give him anything easy, make him work for all of his stuff. And then on the offensive end for us, we've been pretty good whenever we can take care of the ball. So a huge key for us is taking care of the ball and not turning that thing over. If we do that, you know, hopefully we'll get the result, you know, that we want.
Awesome. Q, good luck tonight. Appreciate you being on with us.
Yeah, thank you, Adam. Thanks for having me.
What's up, podcast fans? I want to share some information about one of our partners, Lucio Sports. The team at Lucio has built an integrated platform of coaching productivity and player development apps that are being used by some of the best basketball programs around the globe, helping everyone from NBA champions to youth development academies. Their innovative and competitive memorization games make it so much easier for new players and staff members to remotely get caught up to speed. With animated playbooks, drill libraries, player development planning and monitoring, engaging game plans and scouting reports, predictive play drawing, their content services team, and more, Lucio Sports has got you covered. From players to coaches to support staff and executives, use Lucio Sports to securely keep everyone in your organization on the same page with simple on-demand access to your team's entire knowledge base. For more information, check out luciosports.com. That's LUCEO sports.com.